Welcome back, everybody, to the Runners Connect Run to the Top. Today on our podcast, we have Chuck Engel, who's a marathoner, and he has some amazing accomplishments. I'll let him tell you about them. But if you're interested after this, during this podcast, in learning anything more or visiting any of the resources that we talk about, you can visit the podcast URL at runnersconnect.net/RC11. And that'll take you to all the information about this podcast. So let's get started and welcome Chuck. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to chat with us today.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Always happy to motivate other runners to run more.
Awesome. So let's give our audience a little bit of background about who you are if they haven't heard of you before. Let's talk a little bit about your running background, when you got started, and what are some of your biggest accomplishments.
Running has always been a means to an end for me. It's never been running at the forefront. When I was in junior high, I always ran to just stay in shape for wrestling. Wrestling was kind of my forte through most of my high school career. So that's kind of how I got my start, just trying to stay fit for wrestling. And
okay.
Now I try to stay fit to enjoy other activities of life, and really it developed as a hobby. I've had just a lot of relative success, I guess.
Yeah, so I know when people ask me that question, I'm a little hesitant too, because, you know, don't want to sound like you're bragging or anything, but I know some of your accomplishments are that you've run the most, you have the most marathon victories combined, correct?
Yeah, I think the record has just recently been busted. I was in a chase with a guy from Norway, and, you know, these marathons aren't like Boston or Chicago or anything like that. In fact, I've done research on the ones he's run and the ones I've run, and I did eclipse 148 marathon wins just earlier this year. And I guess it's been taken over now, but as far as Americans, I have the most American wins with 148, and right now I'm staying at 295 total marathons.
Wow, that's an impressive number. I mean, I know I haven't run that many. I haven't even come close to running that many. So it's, just finishing a marathon in general is a big accomplishment. So to be able to do that many of them, pretty awesome. And you've also done the 50 in 50 states, correct?
Yeah, I've done 50 wins, 50 marathons with 50 wins in 50 states, which I'm the first person in the history of marathon running to do it.
Wow, that's even more impressive. So, you know, it's interesting that you say that you got your start in training for wrestling. My family is huge into wrestling. My dad was a high school wrestling coach. My brother was a state champ in Maine. And I'm pretty much the only person in the family that didn't wrestle. So, did you have any, so when you ran, you probably did either cross country and outdoor track?
Yeah, I did cross country and outdoor track. And that was, again, just to stay in shape for wrestling.
Yeah. Now, did you move on with your running beyond that?
Yeah, I did. I went on, actually when I got to college, pretty much the wrestling coach said, you know, you need to focus on this sport. And that's when the running coach said, I think you could be an amazing runner. He didn't tell me to focus. The running coach didn't.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't tell me to focus. He just said, I think, you know, you could be an amazing runner with, you know, just working out a little bit more. And that kind of swayed me, that he wasn't putting pressure on me to just do one sport or the other, but simply let me do some great running. Just said, let's go run.
Cool. Now, so you can be honest here, and I won't tell my parents or my brother, but which sport do you like the most?
I like the physical contact of running, but definitely wrestling was, I like the physical contact of wrestling, but definitely running has given me just so many avenues that there's no regrets. I'm so glad I chose running. I see the injuries that occur, and how many wrestlers do you see wrestling unless it's the acting they do with the
right.
World Wrestling Federation, but running has provided me so many great avenues. So I'm definitely glad I stuck with running.
Yeah. Plus you can eat, you know, so that's a plus.
Anything you want.
Very cool. So that's awesome. Obviously you have a lot of experience with marathoning, and one of the things that we want to do cover in this podcast is, you know, I want to talk about how, you know, you're able to successfully run so many marathons back to back, or not even necessarily back to back, but in a short period of time. Because as a coach, you know, that's a question that I get a lot, is whether it's intentional or not, athletes wanting to do marathons within a short span. And I couldn't think of a better person to ask than, or to interview about this than you, since, you know, not only do you do it, but you're successful at it. You know, it's not just you're going out and, you know, finishing all these races, you're going out and you're winning a lot of them. So, so I guess the first question is, you know, what's your focus when you're doing marathons within a few weeks of each other, you know, in terms of training? You know, you're coming off one marathon and you may only have 3 to 4 weeks before your next one. What are the important workouts, training philosophies, energy systems that you're trying to get in that short time span?
Well, I do so much aerobic base during the marathon that really aerobic base is something that is just, it's covered. You know, if you're doing a marathon on a Sunday and going back and run another one the following Saturday, the biggest thing for me has been recovery, just trying to get as fast of a recovery time as I can. And that actually starts immediately after the marathon. Literally within seconds of crossing the finish line, I'm really trying to reload the glycogen, just trying to get quick sugar in me. And everybody knows my favorite. I mean, I'll suck down a Clif bar as quick as I can and a Dr. Pepper or the Clif Shot, you know, recovery drink, but just quick sugar. And I usually have it waiting for me right there on the spot. So that's where it starts.
That's a great tip. Yeah. So you're, as soon as you finish, you're just like focusing on the recovery, getting in the sugar. What about in the hours after? Do you do anything immediately? You know, obviously you're taking sugars immediately, but what about the next couple hours? Do you cool down? You know, what's that process look like?
Yeah. Most people again go, wow, you just ran 26.2 miles, you know, and anywhere from 235 to 247 or whatever, you want to run more. It's like, yeah, I've got to run something to flush, you know, all the nasty exudate, the stuff that's in my muscles. I got to flush that stuff out. So it might be something as simple as, again, depending on how hard I finish the marathon, if I finish with an all-out sprint for a better time or to outkick somebody, you know, I'll do a really easy, light, slow walk. But if I finish with, you know, just a comfortable pace throughout the marathon and wasn't really concerned about necessarily time, but more concerned about placing, I might be able to do an easy jog after that. You know, again, quick sugar, then a light jog. And then after that, if I'm able, I'll do a light stretching. And then I'm right into either ice bucket. Actually, I prefer ice bags, like the big gallon-sized bags with water and ice.
Yeah.
I prefer those.
Okay, so you're talking like an ice bath kind of
exactly.
idea. Okay,
yes.
Cool. And then, you know, throughout the rest of the day, what does your nutrition look like in terms of, you know, are you trying to do anything specific? Are you really loading on the calories? What's that kind of look like?
Yeah, if I know I have either a race either the next day, I typically will ingest more calories more quickly after the race. Versus if I know my next marathon's not till the following weekend, like if I'm doing a Saturday, Sunday double or a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday marathon, you know, one it for 5 or 6 days. So the closer my next race is, the sooner I'll really ingest a lot of calories. And for me, it's always been carbohydrates and fats, heavy whole grain pastas, you know, maybe with a little side of, you know, some sort of a cream sauce, which most people don't do, but I just know that's where I'm going to get a lot of great calories, a lot of dense calories, and that's what I go for. And my body seems to respond to that. And people are like, well, you're going to gain weight. Anybody who's seen me knows that I'm just not going to put the weight on. So.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I think a lot of runners have that fear that they're going to gain weight when they recover or when they fuel themselves properly. And it's usually not the case if you're training enough. And then obviously in your case, you're doing a lot of training. As a side note, you know, what does your training look like? You know, on a macro cycle, you know, what's your weekly mileage? What kind of workouts are you doing?
Yeah, when I'm hitting the marathons, you know, at least one or two per weekend, typically my mileage is between 90 and 120. And again, it's built up. You know, when I first started, I think I was running maybe 5 miles a week. Mm-hmm. And that was even, you know, just maybe a mile here, a half mile here, way back in eighth grade. And it's just gradually built up. And I think I could have reduced that time. I think instead of running 5 miles, then 6 miles, then 7 miles, you know, this week to the next, just, you know, a little bit of knowledge really goes a long way. And I think you can do the 10% rule, and I think that works accurately.
Yeah.
I think people, they add 10% far too often. They also add quality to that quantity. And that seems to be to the detriment of many runners.
No, you're absolutely right. There's definitely that balance that you need. And that's actually an interesting note that you mentioned. And I haven't actually talked about this or wrote about it, but I've been thinking about it in the sense that, you know, runners like you and I who ran in high school and in college as well really have a big leg up in that sense of that we have that 8-year roughly aerobic base where we increased our mileage very slowly, you know, because, you know, you go from freshman to sophomore year and sophomore to junior year and, you know, you usually don't actually increase your mileage too much. But over that 8-year period, you know, you're talking about adding another 40 to 50, maybe 60 miles a week to your average. Where a lot of runners who are coming into the sport now who are new, you know, 8 years is a lot of time to be training, you know, and so if you figure, well, if you increase your mileage 10 miles, 5 miles or 10 miles a year, you know, that doesn't seem like a lot for somebody who's 30 and like, man, I want results now, you know, but when you're in high school, it, you know, that's kind of the normal progression. So I think we luck out.
Yeah, I really try to get people to understand that the weakest link in this whole thing is going to be your bones. Your muscles will adapt, your lungs will adapt. its bones that are just the weakest link. And if you go out and destroy it, you may be able to run a 50-mile week this week and maybe jump to 70 next week. But that third week, rest assured, if you don't have that 8 years of base building, your bones are going to feel it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So going back to the recovery, what does your training look like the next day or the next couple of days? Are you running primarily easily, or are you trying to do something specific?
Well, we alluded to this earlier in the conversation, and I do so much aerobic training with the marathons themselves, with maybe, you know, the last mile or two, or maybe to get off the starting line, there's some anaerobic, but that's really insignificant to the total volume. So the rest of my week, the majority of the miles are, they've got to be anaerobic. I've got to find time to do some speed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the base that I have, my recovery is you know, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go out and run, you know, quarter repeats, mile repeats, and try to hit, you know, along the gamut from the early cycles at 8 to 10 seconds of stuff, you know, to the 800 meters. So I'll do sprints. I'll also do 800 meters. And it just depends on what I'm feeling I missed out from, like, the marathon the week before, or two weeks before,
mm-hmm.
where I missed. And that'll kind of dictate what kind of a workout I'll do for the following week.
No, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And I hadn't really thought of it that way. But it really does. If you're doing the marathon, which especially if you're doing multiple ones in either two in the same week or back-to-back weekends, you know, you're talking a good 25%, maybe 50% if you're doing two in a weekend, of your mileage is coming at that race itself, you know? So you're looking at training the other energy systems that you don't necessarily aren't using in the race at all.
But I think you've got to keep fresh. You know, just because you don't use those fast-twitch muscle fibers, it's nice to know they're available, and I think that also helps prevent injury.
Mm-hmm.
If those fibers are quick enough and you can teach those fibers to recover faster, again, that helps in the overall recovery process of running multiple marathons week in and week out.
Yeah. So I know this is probably individual. I know you probably play it by feel, but when does that first workout usually occur after a marathon, if you do a marathon?
Well, if I do, say I race Sunday, Saturday, whatever, I will run the next day, and that would be considered a recovery run.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll judge that based on my heart rate the morning after the marathon. If my heart rate, I have a max right now of about 208 to 209. So I'll look at my heart rate, and if it's elevated in the mornings, you know, my resting, not ambient, but my resting heart rate is usually mm-hmm. around probably 40, 42 in the mornings.
Okay.
And if I'm elevated more than about 10%, so if I'm 46 to 48, I'm going to do a shutdown really easy day. I might even get in the deep water and do some deep water running mm-hmm. and just let my body, you know, just kind of recover as much as it can that next day. But again, over the years, I've really pounded my body just to adjust and adapt. So, you know, doing one marathon and say 2:45 effort, I can typically come back and run the next day at 2:45 as well
mm-hmm.
with just a good night's sleep, some good quick sugar after the race. I don't recommend it to everybody unless you've got that background, but you know, that's just part of it. It's the biggest part of it is the recovery.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And there's actually two points there. I'll go to the first one. So do you train primarily by heart rate or?
Almost exclusively by heart rate.
Okay.
I won't race by heart rate because once you've trained by heart rate so much, you have a general feel. And my training, you know, I train on hills, sand, heat, cold. In Coos Bay, I can drive 20 miles inland and get heat.
Mm-hmm.
I can drive, and now that it's winter here, I can drive 20 miles inland and find snow. So I'm really fortunate in Coos Bay that I can run in all these different environments with my heart rate monitor. And, you know, I found that my polar heart rate monitor just really locks me into a great training zone. And then when I get to the race, I say, okay, this is, you know, heat. I know where my heart rate's going to be to get it to about 85 to 90% during mm-hmm. the race. You know, there's all sorts of anomalies and variables that come up race-wise, and I try to adjust to those. It's difficult to throw everything into a training workout that you're going to experience in a race, you know, the lead car taking you off the course. If I'm doing a workout, I pretty much know the course.
Right, right.
In a race, I've had lead vehicles take me off. I've had lead cyclists, you know, take me the wrong way. So you try to throw things in your workout that will assimilate to being panic stricken in the middle of a race.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to do because you never know when it's going to hit in the race, but you try to do it in a training workout.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great point, and that's one of the reasons I actually suggest most of my athletes train by pace, and it's only because I think unless you're really experienced, it's hard to translate that effort that you have in training to race day when you have all those anomalies come up, when your heart rate's, you know, when your adrenaline off the line is like through the roof. So many runners, if they're training by heart rate, if they're not experienced, they can't control themselves enough. They think, I feel great, my heart rate must be nothing right now, and next thing you know, they're, you know, 10 minutes fast through halfway.
Good thing about the heart rate training and the pace training is with most heart rate monitors, you will see a pace. I'm on a Polar RC3 GPS, so I know my pace and I see my heart rate at the same time. So when I'm in a workout, it's great. You know, hey, I can look at my pace and go, okay, at 85 to 90%, I'm roughly running 540, 542s, and that should be comfortable for me during the marathon. So I get to the marathon and suddenly I'm at 515. I'm going, okay, look, I feel good. I'm not wearing my heart rate monitor, but I'm at 515 pace. This is ridiculous. I know what's going to happen. At mile 18 or 19, everything's going to fly apart, and I'll be reduced to 720 pace or what have you. You know, you'll be like 2 minutes off your goal pace. So I do agree with the pace, you know, but I also like to have the heart rate there so that I can see, hey, I'm 85 to 90. This is what it feels like. So at mile 18 or 19, I go, okay, this is what it feels like. I just like to have as many variables behind me backing up my race, and hopefully I've acquired those for my training.
No, I mean, I actually think that's a fantastic strategy and way to look at it. And I think one of the things that the audience can learn from is that, you know, you're using that data, but you're also listening to your, you know, you're also making decisions. You're not just looking blindly at the data and saying, well, this is what it is. You know, you're adapting to it and you're making decisions. And I think our audience can learn from that, because I think that's really the optimal way to approach a race.
Absolutely.
And even going further into heart rate, you mentioned that, you know, you measure your resting heart rate in the mornings. I know a little bit about what that is, but can you explain, you know, do you do that every day, and what are you looking for?
Actually, I typically, with my resting heart rate, I'll take a series of 3 days in a row, and I just sleep with the heart rate monitor on.
Okay.
Again, I'll brag enough about my sponsor, Polar, because I just love what they do, but the heart rate monitor is good. Jeez, it lasts forever. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to bed with it on, and then as soon as I first eyesight, I'll wake up, and I'll do that 3 days in a row. And I typically do that about every two-month cycle, whether it's one of my macro cycles I'm just completing, just to see where I've improved, if my resting heart rate is improving. And that's literally as soon as I wake up. So I'll wake up and look at it, and it says 42 to 48. I'll take it 3 days, take the average, and that's what I'll use as my resting heart rate for the next 2 months.
Okay.
So at the end of that 2 months, let's say I have a workout somewhere in there that my resting heart rate is 56, you know, as soon as I wake up. And I know to do that usually 2 days after my most strenuous workout. I know definitely to check it then.
Okay.
And I'll look, and if I've not recovered from a – because after any strenuous workout, I typically have a recovery day. So 2 days later, after the recovery day, I'll check my morning heart rate. And if I'm elevated, I have to say, you know what, I've got to take an easier day. Whether I go on a pool or bike, something non-impact to, again, give my body a complete chance for full recovery.
Awesome. No, I mean, yeah, that's a really smart way to do it is, you know, 2 days after your hardest workouts, just to make sure that, you know, you're really recovered. And actually going into this was the next thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, you mentioned aqua jogging and non-impact activity. I mean, I think we used to do that when I coached in college, every morning we'd have the athletes who weren't able to run doubles, they would do a double in the pool. And so they would be doing the pool workout, which was, you know, facilitating recovery, and, you know, we'd go a little bit harder since they were, you know, recovering. How much of a, what's that component look like for you in training? How often do you do that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. My training days and coaching days when I was at tenure down in Mississippi, exact same thing. For 8 years, we had the kids in the pool every Tuesday and Thursday in the mornings as a double recovery run. Mm-hmm. And I trained a lot of kids who maybe jumped up mileage because they're in college and they wanted to, you know, really fit in with the big mileage. I'd put them in the pool more often than, you know, maybe even some of their you know, some of their other component or counterparts. Say, if I have a female running 50 miles a week and I had another female who wanted to achieve the same time goals, well, I just put it in the time slot and say, you're in the pool for, if it's an hour run, you're in the pool for an hour, hour and 15. Mm-hmm. As far as my running is concerned, I'm in the pool if I feel like I need the recovery day, and that's about it.
Okay.
I believe in running, and I actually try to get into it, say, on a Saturday or Sunday for a long run, just because I know it's good for me. It's good for knee lift. It's good for just flexibility.
Right.
It's really good to help massage the muscles. So I try to do that once per week as part of a recovery slash longer run.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think that's great. And obviously you run into the issue, and I did as well when I was training a lot, is, you know, at some point there's just not enough time in the day. So when you're running as much as you are, it's a little bit difficult, obviously, but it's good to see that you're, and I think for our audience to see that you're, even somebody who runs so much is using the things like the pool as a recovery tool and as a, almost like a strength training tool, or not strength training, but stretching dynamic type of thing as a tool, and not just, hey, I'm injured, I have to go in the pool. You know, it's unique. And I think a lot of people, if they're listening, should definitely incorporate that into their training.
Yeah. The term cross training is kind of thrown around loosely these days, and it applies to programs and things like that. for me, cross training is just anything than running, whether it's cycling, swimming. And I agree 100%. It's a must have if you feel slightly fatigued, or you feel like a knee or an ankle is maybe getting a little tweaked from the mm-hmm. increase in knowledge or the increase in quality. I agree 100%. The pool is just a great thing to do.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And here's a question, you know, relating to, you know, obviously we're talking about a lot about kind of your training, and you train a lot. You know, how do you suggest that, you know, runners who aren't running quite as much as you are or training quite as extensively as you are, how do you think that they should approach their training if they're going to do marathons close together, you know, not necessarily back to back maybe, but, you know, within a few weeks of each other? How do you think they should adjust their training?
Well, I think you've got to have the mileage. I think the mileage is probably one of the biggest things. And again, there's such a widespread realm of runners out there. We have runners that are just trying to finish these marathons. And as we've seen, you can pretty much walk out the door and go do a marathon. And without any training, you can just finish it. It might take you 12 hours, but you can do it. And races are actually allowing this to take place. If you're competitive and if you'd like to perform, you know, I think there's a good 18-week program that would get you up and running for your first marathon. I think once you're in shape to do that first marathon, you've got the mileage, you've got the volume. And from what I've seen from the kind of the upstart marathon runner, that usually 2 weeks after that first marathon, a lot of them will go out and run as fast, if not faster, than they just did 2 weeks prior. A lot of my fans on Facebook, you know, hey, just want to say thanks for the Run More mantra. You know, I trained 18 weeks for this, you know, for this marathon. I went out and I ran 317, 330, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 2 weeks after that race, I stumbled into another race and I ran a 303. Like, okay, so someone who's not trained for 8, 10, 12 years, I think that type of stuff pays off for them big time.
Right.
And I think during the middle of the week, it's, again, for that type of marathon runner, the upstart marathon runner, it's recovery. If they're not recovering and doing some light, easy biking or jogging, you know, you can't go back and tackle another speed workout, I don't think, and expect to have that speed workout pay off for the marathon the next weekend. I do think there's some speed things, maybe some tempo things you can do just prior to that second marathon, whether it be 2 weeks, 3 weeks away, that will sharpen some things. And I do suggest keeping volume of mileage at a relatively higher level, mm-hmm. not higher than your first race,
okay.
but keeping it 70% of what you were into that first race.
Okay, so there's that balance. So that's what you're thinking, is that there's that balance where you want to be doing enough aerobic conditioning to kind of keep that component in there, but also balancing the recovery. That's kind of where I shouldn't say number, but that idea comes from?
Yeah, exactly. Most people, when they finish their first marathon, they don't want to think about running a second marathon. And so take all that time off, and everything tightens and stiffens. And I suggest, look, get out and force yourself to do something the next day. Again, whether it's in a pool or on a bike, force yourself to do something the next day. You'd be surprised how many people just sit. But if they get out and do it, boy, within 2-3 days, they're like, well, I feel like I could go tackle another one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually when I get the email or the Facebook or whatever. Hey, I just finished my first. I'm really thinking about doing another one 2 weeks from now. What do you think? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Knock it out. You know, if they've got the mileage and there's no injury issues,
mm-hmm.
yeah, send them out to the next one in 2 to 3 weeks, just reducing the overall volume.
Okay. Yeah. So that's your suggestion, is reducing the overall volume for the next 2 weeks. And, you know, if it was you, what kind of, you said you would probably do some type of speed workout?
Yeah, I would do some sort of a tempo workout where I'm approaching 80-85% of my max heart rate.
Okay.
You know, and I would break that down into segments, whether it's, you know, probably just as many as like maybe 3x3/4 mile, 3x1 mile segments, slightly faster mm-hmm. than marathon pace. Again, just to keep things sharp and crisp and keep your body, you know, kind of in touch with what that pace feels like.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. I mean, I think those are some great workouts. Now, what would you do if you had maybe, you know, a longer break, not just a couple weeks, but let's say you're talking like, you know, 5 or 6 weeks where it's not enough to do a full cycle, but it's not short enough where, you know, doing just a little bit is obviously going to be too little. You know, what would you do and what do you recommend?
Yeah, if I've got 5 or more weeks, I'm going to take that first week right after the marathon. And again, I'm going to do something the next day following the marathon. I'm going to do a pool or a bike, definitely going to get that recovery and get everything flowing again and get loose.
Mm-hmm.
It's painful. Anybody who's done a marathon, 90% of people who do their first, I think the next day they don't want to do anything.
Right.
Given it what I call an honest effort. They don't want to do anything. They want to sit down and just drink beer.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll get up and stay hydrated and do quick sugar and do something, that first week again should be recovery based. And then I would do a mini cycle, you know, maybe not a meso, but definitely maybe a micro cycle.
Okay.
do a little base building on that second week post-marathon. Third week, I would do just probably a little bit of tempo running to build up, you know, and then probably fourth and fifth week. The fourth week would be I would sharpen, and then the fifth week, probably going to go down into a small taper mode, if you will,
yep.
where my overall volume will be reduced, but the quality of that volume is going to be pretty intense.
Okay. And now what about the long run? Do you, you know, what distance would you be looking at in terms of, you know, are you looking to get a hard long run in there? Are you just going to run easy, some easy miles? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I definitely think even as much as 5 miles.
Oops, sorry. Can you say that again? The audio kind of went out a second there.
I even think 3 to 4 days prior to your marathon that a good 10, 12 miler is pertinent.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep those aerobic, you know, the aerobic conditioning going. You've got to keep the liver enzymes up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
So many people will take 2 weeks off and never get into a good hour and a half, 2 hour run prior to the marathon.
Right.
And I understand why they're running flat. It's like, I feel so flat today. I feel so dead. Well, that's because your body got back to what it was used to, which was maybe running 3 or 4 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you've lost pretty much the storage in your liver is gone. The storage within your muscles are gone. It's not going to keep for 2 weeks.
Right.
Literally the Wednesday before a Sunday marathon, I'll go out and I'll run 10 to 12. And I think that holds true for that person who's going to take 5 weeks off. You've got to get at least 2 to 3 long runs in between those, you know, between the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And like that third week, let's get that third week back up to the 18, 20 miler on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And next 2 weeks, let's go back down to maybe a 16 and then a 12. As a modified taper for your marathon 5 weeks away.
No, I completely agree, especially with, you know, with the taper issue is I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see runners make when they, you know, when they struggle and they say, you know, what did I do wrong? And I look at their last 2 weeks and the fear of the marathon, it's just like they just shut down. They say, I'm in taper and it's like 3 miles a day, you know, and nothing in there. And I think you're right. A 10 to 12 miler, you know, 5-6 days out, and then, you know, definitely keeping the marathon pace miles up there is really important. So I'm glad that you brought that up and kind of confirmed that. And I think that kind of that 5 week plan is really intelligent and well done. I think that's a great way to approach things.
Speak of this taper, the whole taper thing. And I think people look at it as a complete shutdown. And it's like, oh, I'm tapering. Why can't you run today? I'm tapering. And it's not the absence of running. It's just a gradual. And people go from 100% of their mileage to like 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's ridiculous. I think that 100%, I'll drop mine down to maybe 80 mm-hmm. and then maybe 70%. And again, that quality of the 70% is going to increase. But it's not a shutdown. I mean, a shutdown is like, okay, I'm just going to take the next 5 months off and do nothing.
Right.
A lot of marathoners could run quite, they could run a lot better in their first race if they would really define what a taper, you know, mm-hmm. what taper means.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And one of the best ways it was explained to me is I was coached by a guy named Scott Simmons, and his philosophy was very similar to that. You know, you reduce the volume a little bit, mostly because the workouts are just shorter. You know, you're not doing 10-mile tempo runs anymore in that last 2 weeks. You know, just the workouts are getting a little shorter. But when you think about what easy running is, it's aerobic building, it's easy, and in some cases it's recovery. You know, you're actually recovering by running. And if that's really the case, if you've put in the mileage where a 6, 7, 8 mile run is not difficult, then there's no reason to cut that out of your training, you know, in the last 2 weeks, you know, only until maybe the couple days before the race when you want to start building that glycogen, does it really matter? So I think it's, and for me, that was a big, kind of that clue that was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. If it's an easy run, it shouldn't be tiring me out, you know?
Hey, I agree.
Yeah. So here's kind of a question that I had and it's probably not related to too much to training, but, you know, how do you balance your personal goals of, you know, wanting to do so many, having so many, I guess, different goals? You have these goals of, you know, winning a certain amount of marathons and running 50 marathons in 50 states and winning all of them and those types of things with the performance aspect of, you know, how good can I be? You know, I mean, I think that's on everybody, every runner's mind is, you know, they want to, and especially kind of the athletes that I coach is, you know, you have this, I want to be as good as I can, but I also want to do X and X and X and X and X race. How do you balance that?
I suppose this is the cop-out answer for me. I don't think I ever necessarily wanted to run fast. Running, again, much like growing up, running was always a means to an end. I ran to do other things. I run right now. I mean, I love running, and you probably won't find a bigger fan of running than myself. I just love the sheer energy and effort it takes. However, I run so I can eat a lot. I run so I can have a great glass of wine. I run so I'm more efficient at my job, so I'm more efficient. I mean, it's running to me has just been it's been a big energy warehouse. And the longer I run, the more I run, the more I find if I take a weekend off from running, I'm like, wow, I've got all this energy. Let's go play in the sand dunes. Let's go cliff climbing. Let's hike through the woods and stay out all day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I've looked at running. So speed has been one of those things that's just been, okay, well, if I want more energy to do things later on, I might want to be faster at what I do. So let's add some speed to my running. And that's what I did.
Okay.
I had a couple goals, to run fast in college, but I think those goals were more set toward what my coach thought I could do. He said, well, you could be this fast. You could run sub-4. Mm-hmm. You could run 9 minutes for the steeple. And I thought, well, those are goals. And as long as I had a coach in front of me saying that, I was like, well, that's what I'll work for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm kind of an anomaly in that situation that I really just run for the sheer joy of it. And I'm fortunate that I've had some great coaching in the past that, they've taught me how to be relatively fast.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think that's a great answer. I don't think it's cop-out at all. I mean, one of the things that's great about the sport is that, we all have our internal motivators and we all, levels of success are different across the spectrum. And to me, people ask me this all the time, you were pretty fast yourself, and so how do you balance, being excited about people that are running 4 or 5 hours for the marathon? And to me, it's all about the effort. When I was training and running, I was putting in 100% effort. So it was awesome to run well. And it's the same thing when I coach people that are, even if they're running significantly slower than I can, that's fine. It's all about how hard, how much effort and how hard they try to do something.
So you've opened Pandora's box with that question. How do you justify what honest effort is? I mean, you and I running as fast as we run.
Mm-hmm.
And can you look at a 5-hour marathoner and go, well, that really wasn't an honest effort. So I would critique, even I've seen guys running 227s, 228s, and I go, you're a 212 marathoner. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And people have looked at me and said, you're a 231 guy. Come on, a 256? And then it comes into the play, well, was it an honest effort? Was it a tough course? Was it a hilly course? And it's just tough to try to look at somebody running 8 hours and go, geez, was that a tough course? And that's why they ran 8 hours? Are they normally a 5-hour runner? And I think running is one of those things where everybody just does what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a few elites out there really going for the gold, going for records and things like that. I think the rest of us have just kind of do what we want to do. And mm-hmm. I don't think there's anybody that says, an 8-hour is not an honest effort. Although, I mean, I know I've run slower than 4 hours for a marathon and it wasn't much of an effort. It was just a lot of fun and I had a great time talking. So I think I've experienced both sides of it and mm-hmm. I it's difficult for us to kind of judge, hey, is 8 hours honest?
Right,
is that
right.
Really your, so.
No, I think that's a great response. I think it's honest. One of the questions that I love asking people is, if you could go back 5 or 10 years and tell yourself one thing in regards to your approach to training or approach to racing or one mistake that you made, what would that be and why?
Throughout my career, I've always talked to more seasoned, possibly older runners. And I've asked them that exact same question. What would you do differently?
Mm-hmm.
One of the answers I ever got was from a guy from Mississippi named Brian Pope. Always called himself a starving artist. Never called himself a runner, but called himself a starving artist. For a period of time, he held the master's record in the 5,000.
Yeah, and he still runs pretty well, I believe.
He does, yeah. He's an amazing runner. We were running some little 5K in Jackson, Mississippi. And after the race, I mean, he had dominated the race. He ran low 14s, and there was the rest of us back in 15s, and we just kind of smiled and waved goodbye as he sailed off. But I asked him after the race, what would you do differently? And he said, I'd find more times for naps. I'd sleep a lot more. And he really went into a lengthy diatribe about sleeping more and how he loved sleep, and he would sleep more, and he'd rest more. And I really took it to heart. I mean, I could see his passion for getting more rest and more sleep. And I see just like this past weekend, I was in Florida at the Road Race Management Conference, and I didn't sleep at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably could have chosen to go back to my room early and not hang out with some of the race directors and things. But, that's the balance. And I saw Brian's focus. And so you asked about like 5, 10 years ago. You basically asked me about regrets. I make a decision to either go do something which I know will be to the detriment of my running but might benefit somewhere down the line. So, for example, I went out this weekend, and actually I'm about to pick up and sign with a new sponsor. So, hey, that to me was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That actually motivate me later on to run even more, run even faster. I got a new sponsor. I want to represent that sponsor well. Let's do it. But how much did it set me back? Well, my workout Monday was just complete junk. I got a late flight back, had to drive 4 hours to Coos Bay, and my workout was junk. I still got my workout in. It was junk. So I know that was a quality workout I missed. So again, I don't know that I would change anything from 5 to 10 years ago. I've traveled exactly where I wanted to travel. I've raced in the races I've wanted to race. But I think make a decision and stick with it would probably be that, you know, if I make the decision to go out, be happy with it and don't kick yourself on Monday when you've got a crap workout. Because I always go back and hindsight's 20/20. That's the cliche. You get to the workout Monday and you go, well, man, I ate a lot of fried food on Friday night and I know it's just going to kill me on Monday. Oh, it's so good. I'm having such a good time with these people. So make the decision and not just stick with it, but live with it too.
No, that's fantastic advice. You know, I've never heard that before, or not never heard that before, but you're the first person to say that in an interview. And I think it's a great way to approach things is make a decision and be happy with it and move on. You know, if it happens, it happens, you know, so that's great. But actually I wanted to bring up the sleep thing, you know, like what's your sleep recovery schedule look like? How many hours do you try to get a night?
Yeah, I try to get to bed by 9:30 at night. I'm addicted to this show called The Voice and I hate TV. Never watch TV, but I got into this show called The Voice, and so it's on till 10 o'clock on the West Coast, and so I'm 10:05, 10:06, but because I run so much during the day and, you know, and working jobs, and it's as soon as 10:05 rolls around, I'm out. You're not waking me up, and depending on what the schedule looks like for the next day, I have to get up relatively early, so I might just get 6.5 hours a day on say, Sunday night or, say, Monday night or Tuesday night, and then later in the week, the schedule kind of calms down. So I might be able to go to bed at 9:30 and sleep until 6:30, 7, maybe 7:30 if it's a shorter recovery day like Thursday. And if my afternoon's free, I'll sleep until 8, get the short little 40-minute run in, and then know that I've got the afternoon from like 4:30, 5 o'clock where I can just go out and run, you know, get my longer run, my 10, 12-miler in.
No, that makes sense. No, that's good to hear. So actually, before we go, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, the sponsors and who you run for and those types of things.
I mean, it's been great with Team Marathon Guide. John Elliott at Marathon Guide has been sponsoring me for over 10 years now. I think 2003 we met, and we got things kicked off. And 2005 is when everything really started to happen. So I've been with John forever. He's been great. I've been with Cliff Bar slightly longer. I actually signed a contract with Cliff. I think my first contract with Cliff was 04. And it's great because now I see the transition that happens at Cliff, and I see the new national sponsors. You know, my rep has changed like 4 times at Cliff. And, oh, yeah, I'm basically – old guy at Cliff now on the team. You're the old guy. I was like, okay, yeah, I've been here forever. And I'm a loyalist. Same thing with Polar. I've been with Polar Heart Rate Monitors forever, with Janelle Jackson over, you know, and Wayne Vartabedian, and of course, Marty Reno Turner. Those guys have been great to me. Anything I need, they're there. I just recently picked up Zenza. Zeev down in Florida has been just phenomenal. He's been on top of things. So I'm really fortunate to be in the you know, the position I'm in. And it really got started just by the hobby running. Hobby running led to some great sponsors, some great relationships. So I've just been blessed. It's been a great career.
No, that's awesome. I mean, it's exciting to hear that from somebody who is obviously so passionate about running. And you know, again, that the mantra "run more." I mean, that's really, it's great to hear. It's inspiring, and I think everybody should listen to it. How can they, you know, follow you, get in touch with you, those types of things?
I've got a little website that I dabble on about every 3 or 4 months, but I try to keep my results updated. Marathonjunkie.com is the best thing. Or if there's a Facebook, the social networking, Facebook Marathon Junkie, you can, you know, Facebook search that. And I have a fan page that I'm on all the time. And I tell people, look, I just post things as I feel it. Facebook for me is one of those things. There's no gut check. There's no filter. I just post it as I feel it. And again, I make the decision. I live with it and I love it. And, you know, a lot of people see something that I post and they're offended by it. And I say, you know, it was a flash opinion. Understand that it's coming with very little filter. In fact, no filter at all. And yeah, I just love to get the discussion started. If I see something that affects me, I'll post it. And I go, does anybody else feel this way? And if not, why? And then I think those are the type of discussions where we learn, not just running, but just in life in general as well.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. So we'll throw up those links at the bottom of this, post. If people want to see it, it's runnersconnect.net/RC11. And, you know, people can follow you on Facebook, check out your website. It's pretty good. I did enjoy a lot of the stuff that you had to say, and you're right. It's a little, you know, it's your opinion. And, but I love that kind of stuff. You know, because it's honest. It's not the fluff. This is what I feel. And, you know, whether what I believe or not, it's definitely great to see other opinions. So
Thank you.
Very cool. Well, you know, Chuck, I wanted to say thanks for, again, for taking the time out of your day for this interview. I learned a lot. I know my audience is really going to benefit from this. I really appreciate you taking the time, sharing your knowledge. This was great. And thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it too. Thanks so much.
Thanks.